This meeting is now being recorded.
One of the greatest religious teachers of truth, basic truth in the world, Master Kirpal Singh. No song. Sit down.
So if any person who's left out, if they want to come forward, they can come down here just for the new people. And I think many are standing, they may kindly sit down if possible.
Dear brothers and sisters, yesterday, last night, we were talking about, and we came to the conclusion that nobody has seen God at any time. Which God? God Absolute, who was wordless, nameless, that nobody has seen, nobody can see, that is only just supposing it to him. Of course we can see God when he wanted to be many, there was vibration, and that vibration resulted in two things, light and sound. So that God into expression power is God word, Naam, Shabd, Kalma, and so many other names. So that God into expression power, called Word, Naam, that is the cause of the creation of all universe. So that has got two aspects. God is light, and God is musical sphere. We can see the God into expression power, the two aspects of which are light and sound. Now the point remains, who can see that God into expression power? Krishna says, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and light on my path. Guru Nanak says, when you come in contact with Naam, you become luminous, you see the luminosity comparing to thousands of suns together. Mahamudra Singh says, God is like Khuda Noor. So we can see the two aspects of God, the two expression power, not God absolute, mind that. Now, who can see that God is the creating power of all the universe, is the maker of all universe, is the controlling of all universe, he is permeating all universe. So God is acting in the heart. Again, to differentiate which God, God into expression. And that was light. And about that light, it is said, take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. That light is in each one of us. So the point is, who can see that God into expression power, the light of God, and the music of the sphere, Nada, Kalamikani. God God resides in every heart, but where He is manifest, He is made word, made flesh. Such a person can withdraw the attention, which is the outward reflection of the soul, from all outside and from the body below, take it to the seat of the soul at the back of the eyes. There, the single eye opens. There, the third eye is open. There, Shiva Netra, the latent eye, if it is open, with that you can see God, light of God. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now I submit it, who can let us see that light? Christ said, I have come to make those people who see, who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. What Guru also means the same thing, who can remove the curtain of darkness from before you and make the light manifest. So such like persons are sent by God from time to time to guide the child humanity. Ever since we are separated from God, we have not yet gone back to our home. We are so much entangled and identified with the meshes of the world that we have forgotten also. So Master come. They make men see the God in Krishna's power. It is said when man was sent out to the world, seals were put on the eyes and ears so that they may not see that light within them and they hear that nada, the music of the spheres reverberating in all creation. So God, when He finds His children very unhappy in the misery, He sends such men who open, break those seals from the eyes, they begin to see. Who break the seals of the ears, they begin to hear. Before that, in the terminology of the saints, they are blind and deaf. When they go to such a person, they begin to see and begin to hear. Christ said, what you see, the old prophets could not see. What you hear, old prophets could not hear. Oh, if you want to see God, you see. Where the world philosophies end, there the religion starts. So, required somebody, teacher is required everywhere. Child is born, his parents, brothers are teachers, in school they are teachers. In all outward pursuits, somebody is met. Experts in that line is required to guide us, teachers. All these subjects relate to the outward faculties, mind and intellect. And this is such a subject where all philosophies, world philosophies end. When you rise over body consciousness, there they be the stars. Could you have a dream that such a person not required to look at, who sees that and make us see? Call him anything if you like. So Maulana said, if you want to pay visit to the place of pilgrimage, it is best you take somebody who has already been to the place of pilgrimage. Who can be that? He says, maybe Hindu, maybe Turk, maybe Arab. There's no question who is he, what label he is carrying. One denomination answered to that people. Who has seen, who has been to that place? Take him by him. So we need somebody who can help us here. In what way? our souls are identified. The outward expression of the soul is called attention, attention. Identified with the body and outward faculties and the world outside, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We cannot differentiate ourselves. All masters said how to come out of this delusion. You know thyself. This is the little thing was done yesterday. I briefing your mind. And how to know oneself? Generally we see at the level of the feelings or emotions or trying influences, they are all subject to error. Seeing is above all. So Master say, first see and then say. In their terminology, they say all are blind. Very sweeping remark, of course. All are deaf. Kabir say, had there been one or two, I could have made them understand. Wherever we all are sitting blind. Blind is one, not that who has got no eyes on the forehead, but is one whose inner eye, third eye, single eye is not open to see the light of God, whose inner ears are not open to hear the voice of God. Such a person is called a master, the terminology of the saint. So we need somebody who has seen, make a see, as Christ has come to make those see who do not see. In Gita, you see, fourth chapter you will find, if you want to meet God, meet somebody who has seen God, who can make you see God. Guru Nanak was asked, you say God is everywhere. Have you seen it? Yes. With what eyes? Because those eyes are different. Those eyes are not of the flesh and bones. They are other eyes, other than these eyes. Christ says, thine eye be single. The single eye is not the outer eye. That is open when our attention is drawn from all outside and collected at the seat of the soul, at the back of the eyes, there single eye open, diffused open, not open. So they come, they say what they say. They say there is God. One God. That detail was given yesterday on to briefing. He is eternal, he has got no equal. He was born of his own self. Then Guru Nanak says, well, why we call him one? That is not one. The question once becomes one, the question will become two. This one stands for some other thing which is beyond this one. Satvuddhaya Eka. If you meet some master, he will give you what you say, inner experience of that which is beyond one. The Guru Arjan was asked, why you say one? He said, because we are finite. God is infinite. Because we are finite, we have to use our finite term to express him as one. He is either one or two. Kabir also said the same thing. If we say it's one, then the question two arises. The question two arises, there is duality. So he is not all in all. So we want such a one person, name him as it is like, who has the competency first to weigh up, to rise our body consciousness, open the inner eye, the third eye, or the single eye, to see the light of God. Who can open our inner ears to hear the pealing of God, music of the spheres. And that music and outer music, they are different things, mind that. Outer music takes you to the very what doesn't matter, not beyond. Inner music starts when you rise above matter. Bhai Gurdas says, this music of the spirit you hear when you rise up physical body. Not before. The vast difference between the two. This can take you to the very world of matter, and that will start beyond matter that takes you to the very source from where it emanated, to the absolute God. So Master says, look here, we are all lovers, devotees of some higher power called by so many things. Thousands of lovers there are, but the beloved is one for all. God. Call a man in his life. We may be belonging to different religions, schools of thought, but ultimate what is our ideal before me, us to know God. And to know God we must know ourselves first, because it is the soul who can know God. God cannot be seen by the outward faculties, mind and intellect. It is soul alone that can know God. Like knows it, like. Soul is of the same essence as that of God. Unless we know ourselves by self-analysis, by rising up our body consciousness, we can know God. Strange enough, in the man body, the true temple of God, body works as long as we are in the body. There are so many doors open, the eyes, nostrils, mouth, ear. We cannot run away out of it. Some power is controlling us in the body. That controlling power is the God in this special power, which controls our ears. So say, belong, you may belong anywhere. In any religion, any school of such the thought is there, one higher power, one called by soul. So thousands of lovers are there, but the beloved is one for all. He whom we desire is the beloved of the whole world. And the one God of all men. Not specifically for one reason, religion or the other. When he comes, he is a monopoly, not of anything. He is God of all. God of everything, if you like. So God is one for man, for all creation, and all the devotees have the desire to meet that very same one. So those who really desire him, you see, actually is to well. And the person who tells us about him is truly our brother and our true friend. That is why Guru Nanak said, masters unite us in such a relation which can never be broken in the world and the world hereafter. Sacha sākhana sutri gurmele. So within the master soul is great devotion for his guru. So yesterday that subject was there, today we have to consider, well, devotion to the masters and what they give. This is subject today. So you find in the history of the masters, they were very much devoted to their guru. Christ gives us an outward example of a tree, fruit-laden tree. He says, the branches, so long as they are embedded in the tree, they bear fruit. If they are cut off from the tree, they cannot bear fruit. And he says, what? I am the vine. Ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. You follow? the devotee cannot do without the Guru. It means that as long as one is not truly joined to the one Guru, one cannot be a devotee, and furthermore, cannot become a true devotee of the Lord. Manarum says, God has ordered, but I am so great that all the universes I have created, high and below, they all are not sufficient to contain. But strange enough, I reside, I can name myself in a world made flesh. You find, try to find me, go there. There you'll find I am there. So Guru precedes God, for we have not yet seen God. And we must become as subtle and as fine as He is to be able to do so. Each man views life from his own level. Now take the example, India, there is nothing, appears to be nothing. Is there nothing there? But there is something which is not up to our level of the eyes. Either our eyes become so subtle as the air is, or whatever is there so become magnified to come up to the level of our eyes that we see. To see through the microscope. That magnifies 700 times greater. When you look through it, you see whole of all microbes. Now they are half of you do not see. Why do you not see? Unless you rise as above as he is, or as subtle as he is, as fine as he is, we cannot see. The master's job is what? To withdraw ourselves from the physical body. And make us such a rise above in which that I is open to see. So, if we see through a microscope, we can see atmosphere full of tiny microbes. The eye has not developed the ability to perceive those subtle expressions of life. That is why Guru Nanak says, and you rise above as he is, only then you can see. Ev dukja hoye ko, this is Jagunna. So if man is not as high as God, then what is his first step? God precedes, Guru precedes God. And for God manifests in the Guru. That is different. He resides in every heart. But where he manifests, his word made flesh. And from man's level, he therefore comes before God. He is God plus man. Or God man, or man in God. If a disciple truly becomes a guru man, he also becomes a God man. That is, become a guru man. So unless one sees, how can one meditate upon it? Bin dekhi kaise ko dhyan. Whom we have not seen, how can we meditate on it? How can a person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? You follow me? So firstly, devotion to the Guru is very necessary. Now question, what is Guru? Guru is not the body, mind that. Guru is not the body. Guru Nanak was asked, who is your Guru? He said, Shabad is my Guru. My soul is a disciple. Kabir said, who is your Guru? Where does he reside? He says he resides into the heavens, high above. He is in the heavens, I rise above body consciousness, I am in the body. So God in His patient power is the Guru. Word based flesh is the Guru. We respect the body in which it manifests. In all of us He desires, but they are not manifest. In whom it manifests, the only criterion is He will give you, raise you up so high that your inner eye, a single eye is open, you begin to see light. That's the only criterion. Propaganda goes on like anything, but the two criterion of a guru are the scientist one, who can withdraw your attention from all outside, withdraw from the body below, and open the inner eyes, you testify that there is light. So that is what Master said, don't believe in the words of a guru if you do not see for your own self what is like. So guru is not the body, guru is that power which is manifesting upon a human person. And as such, is never born. That is Christ power, God power, Guru power, or Master power. Never died. All masters have taken up the body and then left it. And we must do also the same thing. So the power which works through the physical form never dies. This is a misunderstanding going around the world. We do respect that human power in which it manifests. Had he not been there, how could he have risen as subtle as I had been? So his job is first to withdraw our attention from all outside, raise up yourself to the eye level, and then open the inner eye. You see for yourself, yes, there is light. So Brahma speaks to the body. Without body, what can Brahma say? Brahma bole, kaya ke bole, kaya mit Brahma kya bole. But the power to which He is manifesting is also called, we respect Him as the Guru. But that person who is His master or Guru, He never says, I'm the Guru. He says, my Guru. That power is the Guru. He is conscious of that power working through Him. Because He is manifesting there. So devotion must necessarily start with the body, we see. This is the first step. And further, now you see, eyes are the windows of the soul. Eyes are the windows of the soul. And soul, in whatever color it is, dyed. That very thing is radiated through the eyes. And further, when you come in contact with some person like that, you look into eyes. When two eyes are made four, that's what they can be carried. Then the radiation comes away. So further we see a glimpse of what is manifesting in His eyes. What is manifesting in His eyes? World? Is all light? Light radiates. This raises us to a higher level, and so the importance of this, of the Guru. Bhakti, our devotion to the Guru has been stressed by all masters. Whose soul is imbued with the intoxication of God. If our soul is imbued with lust, excuse me, then we'll have lust ready. Who is pure, purity, personified, only such things will come to Him. When we set our master feet, He used to bow down to the feet of the Master. He said, what is lying there? Look up, what I'm up. So we always look into the eyes of the Master. With the release comes. So Christ, you see, taught the same thing. He said, I'm the vine, thou art the branches. As long as the branches are better than the vine, they should bear forever fruit. If not, we cannot bear for fruit. So they say, you cannot do without me. This is what he said. And others also said the same thing. Saint Paul echoed this when he said, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. Guru Nanak says, to just be one in the grave of the Guru, this is a long grave. What is the long grave? Just be one, that oneness will come through us. Hafiz explained that his heart was so full of the Beloved that the thought of his being there was gone. He became one with the Beloved. Of course, he had a question. Chuna Fushud Kudai Sinadu Khayale Khayshu Chatadamiya. I was so absorbed in it, I forgot who I am. And no more. It is I, not I, but Christ is in me. This is it. Chuna Fushud Kudai. It to be one with the Guru. So he also says, I have become the body. O Guru, you have become the life. The people should not say afterwards that you and I were separate. But some very sweet language I tell you. He says, Man tan shudam to jashadi, man tan jashadi, tanagoyan bhadami, man digram sudhi, takyasa. Nobody say I was somewhere else, you were somewhere else. We are one. Kabir said, out of the earth, Ram and I appear to be two. But it's for those who have not got a Guru. So all masters say the same thing. Again, Hafiz says, what? I have been grafted to my friend. Mark the word, grafted. When you graft two branches of different trees, what happens? The fruit from that appears to be the same, but the color and fragrance is that of the mother tree. You have seen now the grafted goes on. One branch of a tree is grafted into another tree. The branch which bears fruit, the fruit will appear to be of the same appearance, but the perfume, you see, will be the same as the mother tree in which it is grafted. So Hafiz says, he told him, you get there one plate full of honey. It ordered the sea of immortality. Well, we cannot wear from you. Eat it. He said, I eat it from the corner. He said, why? Because my wings may not be besmeared with the honey. I may not fly me down. Oh, dear friend, it is a sea of immortality. Plunge headlong into it. I am quoting all this in my. What do people think of spirituality? What it is really? What we are seeing, we sometimes discuss that.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Satsang from Master Kripal Singh. That recording was from November 1972 in San Jose. Supporting our reader is David Halliburton. Are you there, David?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay. Gary.
Thank you. I'm going to be reading from The Wheel of Life, entitled The Law of Action and Reaction. And I'm going to start with the introduction, which was actually taken from a talk given by Master at Kirpal Ashram, Calais, Vermont, on October 12, 1963. There is a law of justice, and there is a law of grace, both of them. They are both laws. It is just like when you light a candle, the light is above and the darkness below. If you have an electric light bulb hanging down, then the light is below and the darkness above. So both are the laws working in the world. Sowing a seed, that's a point to be understood. When you sow a seed, it will bring forth similar seeds. There is action, reaction, and then again a reaction. And the thing goes on like that. There's no end to it. After sowing the grain, a man cannot stop having the harvest. The fruit will come. So there are many actions. Actions are of one kind, but there are three aspects to them. There are certain actions which we are doing now, daily, fresh actions. Fresh seeds are sown, you might say. Some have already been sown and are bearing fruit. Others have been sown but are not yet bearing forth fruit. So there are three kinds of karmas or actions. Our present life depends on those reactions of the past karmas which are bearing fruit. They are called prarabdha karma. On that karma, our length of life is based. According to that, some people get children. Some die. Some are ugly. Some are old. Some have a give and take. This is based on those karmas or seeds which have grown in the past and are now bearing forth fruit in action. This you cannot change. When a railroad line is laid down, the train will run over it. Before you lay down any railroad line, it is up to you to lay it down this way or that way. But once it is laid down, the train will have to run over it. So, as I told you, some karmas are bearing fruit. Some we are doing fresh, and others have not yet borne any fruit. That will come up in due course. So, we are independent within certain limits to do some actions, and we are also bound to some extent. Action, reaction, action, reaction goes on. There's no end to it. When a master meets someone, he does not touch the present reactions which are coming up, for our life is based on that. He lets it alone. He lets it go on. But he does two things. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct beyond which we should not transcend. Don't think evil of anybody, even in mind, not to speak of in word or in deed. Be truthful, even in mind. Don't think up anything wrong, acting and posing, scheming, polishing, doing something underground, and then above board doing something else. And further, be chaste, even in mind, word, and deed. And have love for all, because all men are alike. They have the same privileges that each one of us has. So, love all, because God is in the hearts of all. Whether they are rich or poor, whether they are learned or unlearned, they all have the same privileges from God that you have. Also, do not hate others, even in mind, word, or deed. And further, when you are to love God and love all humanity, then you must give selfless service, not selfish service. For love knows service and sacrifice. Selfish service will again cause a reaction to come. If you serve selflessly for the sake of God and others, then that won't bear forth fruit. As for the present actions which are having reactions, these are also softened down, or polished down, you might say, by the Master. How? By giving some bread of life to your soul, so that your soul becomes strong. Suppose a fight is going on. One man is very weak, and the others are strong. They come to blows, and this and that thing. The one poor fellow who is very weak gets one blow and is stunned. He cries out, "I am killed." And the others who are strong say, "We don't mind. We have had so many blows, but we don't care a fig for it." Why is this? Because they are strong. Reactions do come up, but for those who have strong souls, who have the bread of life, they lose their pinching effect. For the future, Master lays down a line of conduct. For the present, which is bearing fruit, he gives food to the soul so that it will become strong and there will not be any pinching effect. And for those which are not yet bearing forth fruit, he gives the disciple a contact with God within. By coming in contact with God within, when his inner eye is opened, he sees that he is the doer of all, that we are mere puppets in his hands. The disciple becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. The result is that there is no I-hood left. And all those actions which were sown in the past and are still awaiting fruit are burned away. Who is there to bear their fruit? So this is the way in which you can escape from the reactions of the past. If you say, "Oh, I can do this and that," with a little I-hood in it, so long as you are the doer, you have to bear the reactions of it. When no doer is left, then God is the doer. You are absolved. There is a story given in the Quran, the scripture of the Mohammedans. There was once a saint who, from his very childhood, had left the world to reside in a jungle like this, that is, at Kirpal Ashram. Here, fortunately, you find enough water, electricity, and everything else, but there was nothing like that. For miles and miles around, there was no water and nothing to eat. So, he used to pray to God, and God made some arrangement to take care of him. One small spring sprouted forth, and from that very sweet water was flowing, and he used to drink water from that. And they say there was one pomegranate tree, and each day one pomegranate was born by the tree. He used to eat that pomegranate and drink that water and pass his days. It is said there that after long, long years, 70 or 80 years, he died. He was presented to the court of God. God looked at him. "All right, we forgive you as a matter of grace." His eyes opened wide. "Well, all through life I've been killing myself, doing this sort of penance and that sort of penance. And with all that, I'm now being forgiven as a matter of grace, as an act of grace only?" In his heart of hearts, he thought perhaps that a very great injustice was being done. God read his mind and said, "Well, would you like us to make an account of your own actions?" "Yes, you may, please." At heart, he wanted it. "All right, look here. In that jungle, there was no water for miles and miles altogether. One spring was created there only for you, specially for you. And there was a pomegranate tree. Each day it bore one big pomegranate. No tree can bear forth one fruit daily. So that is in compensation for all you've done. Now, let us account for your other actions. You were walking along the way, and some insect died, trampled down under your feet. You must be trampled down as you trample down. Further, you did this and that." The saint thought that perhaps matters had gotten worse and said, "All right, please excuse me. Forgive me, if you would like to." Masters come not to break the law, but to fulfill the law as a matter of redemption by grace, not as action, reaction. Guru Nanak says, with actions you can have reactions. As you sow, so shall you reap. But redemption comes only by grace. All masters say so. Of course, it does not mean we should be vicious. We should restrict ourselves according to the commandments the masters have given us. Another thing you might want to know about it is, a father has a child who does not obey him. He commits some offense, something like that. What would the father do? Would he send him to the police? I don't think so. No father would permit his son to be sent to the police. He might slap him once or twice, but he wouldn't send him to the police. So, similarly, when you come to a master, the God in him, you are all his children. He doesn't send you on the regular course to bear the fruit of what you have sown. That's a concession. Otherwise, how long would you continue like that? First, there's the seed, and then there's the tree, and then there are many seeds, and again a tree. Is the egg before the hen, or the hen before the egg? Where's the end? So, it's a matter of redemption by grace. It is something like that, so that you can understand it. Unless you become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, there's no escape, no emancipation. As you sow, so shall you reap. That goes on like that for eons and eons of time. Someone asks a question. Do we have to work it all off on this physical plane? All the karma we have, like the B type of karma that we are working off in this life. What about the things that we are doing now or have done in this lifetime? What if we're not all finished up by the time we die? Master answers, I think I have replied to you and you have not followed it. When you become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, when you become selfless, who will bear whatever actions you have done? Furthermore, that is why all masters say, be desireless. Master tries to wind up all your reactions of the past, just as I told you, by giving you strength, by giving the bread of life to your soul, so that the reactions which are coming up will not be pinching to you. But he doesn't touch them. Otherwise, as soon as a man was initiated, he would die. For that reason, they are not touched. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct. For the past, if you become selfless, a conscious co-worker, then nothing will come up. Guru Nanak says, O Master, what is the use of coming to your feet if, when coming here, we still have to bear the fruit of all the actions which we have done in the past? He gives an example. What is the use of going to the feet of a lion if still jackals come and howl at you? So that is a great blessing. Now the question may arise, what is a master? A master is a man like you. Each one of us has the same privileges. The difference lies only in the fact that although God resides in every heart, in the heart of a master, he is now manifest. Master is a conscious co-worker, that is, he is doing it. It is not he who is speaking, but the God in him who is speaking. He becomes a mouthpiece of God. We can also become the mouthpiece of God. Every saint has his past, and every sinner a future. How has he become the mouthpiece of God? The man who has reached that stage can also give you the same thing. On the very first day when he initiates you, he withdraws and drags your soul above body consciousness and gives you a contact with the light and sound principle of God. That is the way back to the ultimate absolute God. When you become quite conscious of all that, you see that It is he that is doing it, not I. So when all reactions are finished, it is just like having a few grains of seeds which have been roasted in the oven. Even if you sow them, they won't bear forth fruit. They will not grow. It is something like that. That concludes the introduction. And now I'm going to move ahead to Chapter 5 of The Wheel of Life. No one can be said to have been born for himself alone, for none can be an island unto himself. To serve the needy, sick, and starving is also a sideline, more effective than mere preaching. Service before self stirs and kindles the embers of sympathy, kindness, and love. These virtues have a great purifying effect, and clean a person of all his dross, and entitle him to the highest knowledge of divinity. Pleasure tastes well after service is a well-known adage. Ahimsa, or non-injury, refers to man's abstaining not merely from killing, violence, and injury, but includes also evil thought and ill word. While it may not be so with brutes and beasts, ahimsa infuses strength in man, which not only excels many virtues, but is the highest virtue above all others. Service done to sincere seekers of the divine path is of far, far greater value than any other service. Helpful ways include inter alia, distribution of alms to the really indigent and the needy, giving sweets to those engaged in extraordinarily arduous pursuits in inaccessible places, nursing the sick, and helping the afflicted ones. All these qualities are great aids in the path and should be encouraged and cultivated by assiduous practice by all means possible. One should not, however, rest content with them alone, but one must push ahead with the help of these purifying processes on the way to freedom as enjoined by the Master. Love is the panacea for most of the ills of the world. It is the core of all other virtues. Where there is love, there is peace. Love, and all the blessings shall be added unto thee, is the central idea of the teachings of Christ. The entire edifice of Christianity is founded on the twin principles of love thy God with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy might, and love thy neighbor as thyself. God is love, and so is the human soul, being a spark from the same essence. St. John says, he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. And he who loveth God loveth his brothers also. Guru Gobind Singh likewise laid emphasis on the prime need of love. Verily, I say unto thee that God reveals himself only to those who love. A Muslim saint says, God created man, an embodiment of love. For his glorification, his angels were quite enough. To crown all these virtues comes truth and good living. One should, in the first instance, be true to oneself. The trouble with most of us is that our mind, tongue, and actions do not move in unison. We have one thing in the mind, another on our tongue, and still another on our hands. To thine own self be true, and it must follow, as night the day, that thou canst not then be false to any man. That's from Shakespeare. You are in the body. God, the controlling power, is also in the body. If you are true to your own self, you have to fear none. Before you attempt to deceive anyone, you first deceive your own self. Rama cannot cheat Rama, were the words of Swami Ram Tirath when someone tried to warn him of the deceptive ways of the world. Truth is the greatest of all virtues. True living is greater still. We must try to lead a neat and clean life in the temple of the Holy Ghost and not defile it by falsehood and lusts of the flesh, thus turning it into a money changer's den of the devil. It is commonly believed that prosperity is the source of peace, but it deceives the fools like a will-o'-the-wisp and endangers the rich. It lets go the bridle from off the mind. When once the mind gets off the right track, it recklessly contracts sins, which entail dire consequences. To absorb the self wholeheartedly in the soil of worldly uncleanliness, in mind, word, or deed, is a heinous sin, and death is the reward thereof. The paths leading to worldly enrichment and to God lie far apart. One can take either of the two as one may like. The mind is a single entity linking the body with the soul at one end, and the body with the world and worldly riches at the other. Thus, one has of necessity to choose between the two alternatives. Once the die is cast, one has perforce to apply oneself steadily to reach the goal, whatever it be. Riches, per se, are no obstacle in the way of spirituality, for it is the common heritage of all, the rich and the poor alike, and neither of them can claim it as a special gift for himself. All that is required for success on the path is genuine desire, honesty of purpose, a pure living, and a steadfast devotion to the cause. A rich man has, of course, to see that he does not use unfair means in amassing his wealth, and that he uses his honestly acquired treasures in fruitful pursuits and not on wasteful and ephemeral gains. He should always look upon his riches as a sacred trust from God, wherewith to help the needy and the poor, the hungry and the thirsty, the sick and the ailing. For all such people have a claim on him as human beings and children of the same Father. This was the advice given by the sage Ashtavakra to Raja Janak, when, after granting him a practical experience in the science of the soul, he returned to him his kingdom, which the king had dedicated to his master, preceptor, before initiation into the sacred path of practical spiritual experience. He was advised to consider it as a gift from him, the Rishi or Godman, and to use it for ameliorating the condition of his people and his country, which were consigned to his care by God. Unless the riches secured by fair means are utilized wisely and well, one is likely to go astray and become egocentric and a slave to his ill-gotten wealth, and is unknowingly caught in the golden chains that keep him in bondage. To warn against this, Christ, in no uncertain terms, declared that it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. T.S. Eliot, a Nobel Prize winner, says, "Take no thought of the harvest, but only of proper sowing." The sowing, then, is of prime importance, for quality of the harvest depends on the quality of the seeds sown. Next comes the proper tending, the humanizing process which usually takes quite a long time, covering a few incarnations, depending on the past makeup of each individual. But with the right type of steadfast devotion and the grace of the Master Power, one can easily traverse the otherwise hard and tortuous path. A perfect master, conversant with the turns and twists of the road, says Kabir, can, however, take the disciple through in no time. The pilgrim soul, with a competent guide and honest endeavor, can easily swim over the ocean of the world, even in the midst of worldly life. Those who do not engage in bhajan and simran are always in trouble. They float endlessly on the stream of lustful pleasures. Practice of vairagya does help one in the process of self-purification, and gradually a disciple is enabled to cut the upas tree of multitudinous desires, first by cutting the branches and then striking at the root. No one is faultless. Man is the child of error, and error is always his creed. Though to fall in sin is human, yet to persist in it is villainous. It is not profitable to stock bad merchandise. It is good to be born in a temple, but to die in it is a sin, for we have gradually to rise above all forms and formalities of the kindergarten class, which all social religions provide, and to grow into the sunshine of spirituality. We must study the path if we wish to divine the future and awaken in the reality beyond. One who takes no thought of the future will soon have to rue the present. The sins and sorrows are our constant companions and go cheek by jowl. The small foibles gradually let in greater ones, while those confessed are half redressed. True repentance followed by good actions goes a long way in assuaging suffering. Man would do little for God if the devil were dead. A man living under the shadow of an impending calamity lives at his best, for he strives the hardest. To find faults in others is quite easy, but to reform one's self is the most difficult, for we see not the beam in our own eyes. Fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, and a danger foreseen is half avoided. One who is forewarned is forearmed. I'll stop there, and I just want to say, Master, thank you for this opportunity to sit together in your holy name. Amen.
Thank you, David, for the wonderful reading. Today we had 77 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.